Blog Talk Radio.
Well, hello everyone, and welcome once again to another edition of WrestleChat Radio SmackDown Report. Marcus Kane coming to you live from the SBTV studios right here in New York. And for the next 90 minutes, we will be discussing SmackDown Live this week, the post-SmackDown Live to our big WrestleMania, of course, at 347-215-8486. 347-215-8486. If you'd like to get in on the conversation, of course, as always, you can hit us up in the chat room and we can take your questions, your
You're listening to WrestleChat Radio.
Well, folks, for some reason, Blog Talk will not play that intro until everyone is logged in. So we can't start the show, apparently, until everyone is logged in. Don't know why that is. Very unusual things happening at Blog Talk Radio, ladies and gentlemen. That button was pushed over 2 minutes ago with no success. Anyway, welcome to WrestleChat Radio SmackDown Report. We will be discussing, of course, this week, SmackDown Live, the SmackDown Live right after WrestleMania, and if it was any better than what ended up being a disaster on Raw, you can contact us at 347-215-8486, 347-215-8486, if you'd like to get in on the conversation, or you can hit us up in the chat room. We'll take your questions, your comments, and your opinions there as well. Before we get to all of this, though, there's quite a bit of news, folks, coming out of the WWE primarily, and that's why we have this 90-minute episode today, so we can kind of go through some of this, because there's a lot to digest. The main thing, I suppose, is that Sasha Banks reportedly almost quit the WWE to WrestleMania, or literally at WrestleMania, when she found out that her and Bayley would be dropping the tag team belts to the Iconics. Now, while this hasn't been totally confirmed, we have not seen Sasha since, and the word is she's been given a few weeks to consider whether she actually wants her release. She has missed a couple of appearances she was scheduled to do for the WWE, including the Wendy Williams show and a couple other things. She's tweeted some rather mysterious things. Look, this is not the first time that this has happened with Sasha Banks. It's not the second time that this has happened with Sasha Banks. And to be perfectly honest, I am amazed at how many people are comparing this situation to the Revival. They're saying, well, you know, look, the Revival, they were a tag team. They really weren't being used. They said they wanted to leave. They were given the belts. And then they were still treated like garbage, and the belts were taken off them right away. As a matter of fact, at WrestleMania, same time as Sasha and Bayley. It's a very similar situation to them being unhappy and Sasha Banks being unhappy. That is ridiculous. That's a ridiculous analogy. And here's why it's ridiculous. Sasha Banks has been in the main event picture of the women's division forever. She had her Hell in the Cell match. She had her big matches. She was one of the very first people they were really pushing. She has had more high-profile matches in 6 months than the Revival have had in their career with the WWE. It's not the same thing. The Revival were not being used at all. They were being used primarily as a comedy team who were losing every week to the Lucha House Party in Lucha House Party rules. Sasha Banks has been treated extraordinarily well by this company. Extremely high-profile superstar on all the posters, in all the pay-per-views, plugging away her merchandise, sending her out for personal appearances. Please, don't tell me it's like the Revival. That would be like saying, well, you know, the Dean Ambrose situation is very, very similar to Heath Slater. No, it's not. It's not even close. So now the question really is this. What the hell is going on in the WWE? We have a real problem here, and the problem is that both sides in these type of situations have a legitimate point. And that's not often. And here's why. Sasha Banks is perfectly right when she says it's ludicrous to create the women's tag team belts, hand them to two of your top, arguably two of your top solo wrestlers, keep them away from the solo hunt for a while to embark on this tag team mission to get the belts, give them the belts, and then basically take it away from them almost instantaneously. She's right about that, but it's not her call. It's not her call. Ultimately, it's the WWE's call. And if the WWE is too stupid to see that what she's saying is correct, that it weakens the belts to remove them so quickly from people, then they have a right to be wrong because ultimately they're the boss. Now, ultimately, you have a right to complain. You have a right to quit, I suppose. But let's just think about this for a minute. Every wrestler who is not satisfied with their win-loss record decides, I'm quitting. There will never be any more professional wrestling. Because not everyone can win. Not everyone can be the top star. Somebody has to be the mid-carder. Somebody has to be the enhancement talent. Somebody has to be the jabronis. Somebody has to be the carpenters. And if you don't have those people who willingly say, sure, I'll do that, or I'll drop a match here and there, then I don't know what to tell you. But you're not going to have professional wrestling because someone has to lose. Now, Sasha Banks has done her fair share of winning. And I'm quite sure that the WWE did not say to her, Sasha, you and Bayley are dropping the belts so we can now embark upon a year-long mission to destroy you. And you're going to be laying down for everybody in every possible situation, and we're just going to ruin your career. I'm pretty sure they didn't say that. I'm pretty sure that the WWE probably had in mind, look, we're going to need Sasha and Bayley as individuals. Yeah, that we could still keep them friends. But we may need them as individual performers, and if they're locked into this tag team title thing, it's probably not going to be a good idea, so let's get them out of it. Now, should they have considered that before they ever put the belts on them? You bet. And that is their bad, and that goes to show their horrible lack of planning, their horrible lack of any kind of continuity or forward thinking at all. Probably what their thought was. And now we're seeing Sasha Banks storm out. Well, okay, well, how about if everybody storms out? How about if then, you know, Rusev storms out, Nakamura storms out, Andretti Cien Almas storms out. Everybody storms out. I guess, where are they going to go? To AEW and do what? Say, I can't do anything but win? Because ultimately over in AEW, somebody's going to lose to. Somebody's going to be the enhancement talent there. Somebody's going to be the mid-carders there, because that's the way it has to be. So Sasha Banks effectively takes her ball and goes home. We don't know what's going to happen. I can promise you this, the WWE is not releasing her. I don't know how much longer she has left on her contract, but the WWE is not releasing her because, as much as they would probably hate to admit it, and as much as she is certainly not the wrestler that some of the women that AEW has already signed happen to be, she would indeed be the biggest signing AEW had, because that's how big the WWE's made her name. And she's still not satisfied. They've made her a household name. And I'm going to go on record and say to you that they've done this with a girl who has mediocre mic skills, a negative personality, and fair to slightly above average ring skill. That's it. And very injury prone. Sasha Banks is not the girl who's going to go over and do 25-minute matches once a week. I can tell you that right now. She'll be on the shelf quicker than a used book. She's used semi-properly in the WWE. Spot area, she gets the main events and high-up matches. Now, again, I'm going to tell you, I agree with her about the tag team situation only in as much as there was no reason to give them the belts if you were just going to take it away and say we need you as solo performers. And I agree they have made her look terrible with winning the belt, having it taken away. Win the belt, having it taken away. They've done that to her. This is the third time. And I see her point because the WWE... and any wrestling federation, for that matter, the belt, you don't win the belt. You're given the belt. You don't win anything in professional wrestling. You're told you're going to have it. You're given it. But when they give it to you, it's a sign that they believe in you. It's a sign that they feel you are a good person to carry that and represent the company. So there's some prestige to it. And when it's constantly taken away, it's like, we believe in you enough to give it to you. Nah, you suck. We believe in it enough to give it to you. Nah, forget it. Maybe we really don't. And at some point, I guess Sasha has said, look, I've had enough of this. Can't always just take your ball and go home if you're not the winner. Because that's not what wrestling's about. At the end of the day, it's a TV show and your character's scripted and whatever the script writers write for your character is what you do. And if you really don't like it and you really feel I am being totally ruined, then I guess you can leave. But you better hope that the next place you land has a better script writer. Because there's no guarantee you're going to land. Look at what happened to Bret Hart. Bret Hart left for greener pastures thinking, I'm Bret Hart. It does not matter where I go. Wherever I go, I'm ruling it. And he found out very quick that the writers over there in WCW had no clue how to handle Bret Hart. So she better think it over, Mike, because it's not necessarily a cakewalk outside of WWE. Why am I not hearing Mike? Let me try Todd. Todd, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay, so what's the news on Sasha Banks here? It's kind of surprising, but she's pulled this before.
Oh, you're absolutely right there. Like you said, she did this like a month or two back after she won the tag team, before she won the tag team titles and everything. And I remember a while back, too, when other superstars, too, like the Usos, Naomi, Rusev, Andrade, they were talking about leaving as well because the way they've been treated and the revival as well. And it's the way they've been treated lately.
It is the way they've been treated. And, look, it's not that I don't understand. Everybody wants to be dog, or everybody wants to be used and utilized as well as they can possibly be utilized. But maybe it's time we, as fans, realize the following. The WWE does not sound like it's a very fun place to work. Not for the writers, not for the people backstage, not for the workers. It sounds like it can be a very stressful and negative place to work. And with the high level of competition and people coming in constantly who could, quote-unquote, take your spot, people with fragile egos or people who feel their spot isn't solidified often feel vulnerable. And the WWE doesn't do anything to solidify that by saying, look, you know, there's ebb and flow here. You're not going anywhere. We got major plans for you. We got to cycle you back down. We'll cycle you back up. That's the way this business works. They don't seem to do that. They're just like, here, take what we're giving you or get out. And it has, you're right. You've just ran down a litany list. Nakamura is probably leaving. Rusev and Lana have threatened to leave. The Revival are probably leaving. The Usos threatened to leave, although I still say they never had any intention of leaving. They were just using that as contract bait. Sasha Banks now apparently wants to leave. Neville walked out. There's a long list of people. Now Dean Ambrose. We're going to get to him in a minute. But at this stage of the game, I think the WWE really has some trouble, Mike, because this is an awful lot of people who seem to be unhappy. And the general consensus seems to be from all of these people that the WWE is not really a very fun place to work.
Right. I mean, you work your entire life, well, not your entire life, but most of your life to get there. And then when you get there, you find out that, well, it's not always cracked up to be. Yeah, you're getting a big paycheck, but they don't treat you well. They don't promote you well. I get what Sasha Banks is saying. I mean, we've talked about it ad nauseum how she never could defend a belt. And this tag team title is no different. You know, you want your two of your better singles wrestlers as singles, but that doesn't belabor the fact that she didn't defend it. She lost it the first time she tried to defend it, even though Bayley lost hers as well. But again, and then we saw what they did on Monday night with Bayley. She lost on Monday night too. So I don't know where they're going with her, but that's neither here nor there. Yeah, Sasha has a right to be angry. Yeah, but I can see the WWE's case, and now of course Naomi has a right to be angry as well, because look at how they've treated her. You know, now it's a little bit different with Naomi because again. You know, she went off on her own and tried to do something with the belt and put all those lights and crap and stuff on it.
What it really boils down to is this. The WWE just has too many people. They can't hope to use them all. They can't hope to make them satisfied. And I think they also have to understand that they can't, according to every source I have, Sasha Banks and Bayley walked into WrestleMania thinking they were defending the belt successfully. So there was never a thing saying, okay, let's sit down, let's have creative sit down, or the powers that be sit down with Sasha and Bayley and say, look, here's the long-term plan. You guys are winning the belts. You're going to be the inaugural women's tag team champions because we feel you two have deserved it. You're two of our best performers, and we feel you deserve that historic moment. Not going to lie to you. You're not going to keep them long. And the reason you're not going to keep them long is we need you as solo workers. We can't keep you tied up in a tag team. So I'm letting you know ahead of time. You're winning them because it's kind of a gift to you because you guys worked that hard. You're not going to keep them that long. You're going back to doing solo stuff. We just wanted to let you know so that there's no confusion that you're just a temporary holder of these belts until we really establish a more solid tag team division because we need you guys as solo workers. And then if they said, well, I have a problem with that, I'd rather not do that. Okay, well, then you know what? Then you solve the problem then. What's happening is no one has any idea what's going on because nothing's written in advance. And I don't understand why you can't write at least a few months in advance. I don't understand why you can't do that. And we're going to get to this in a moment because the Road Dogg apparently, from what I hear, has resigned as one of the head writers. Not 100% confirmed, but that's what I hear. And on this show, countless numbers of times, folks, I have said to you, professional wrestling storyline writing is not hard. As a matter of fact, if you're a fan and you love wrestling, it's pretty damn easy. And you're at least pretty damn easy. But what I've never said, and I would never say, is that being a writer for the WWE is easy. And here's why it's not easy. Because you're not really the writer. You come up with a plan and say, okay, Bray Wyatt is going to come back with maybe, I don't know if that's his stupid thing with the Muppet in a box, but let's say it is. Bray Wyatt's going to come back with this mysterious box. And he's going to talk to it. And nobody's going to really know what's in it. But it's going to seem to move around or whatever. And there's going to be this big deal involved in it. And people say, that's cool. And then you pass it to the next guy. And he says, no, well, I want to change it. There's going to be maybe like the spirit of Sister Abigail in the box or something like that. And then another writer says, okay, well, that's cool, but I want to change it. It's going to take the form of a some kind of an animal, like a prehistoric raptor or a buzzard or some looking thing, and it's actually going to talk. And by the time it passes seven writers, it's went from a decent angle to bullshit. And then when it doesn't work, the guy who came up with the first part of it is the guy who gets blamed. Oh, you wrote that shit. Yeah, before it was edited 17 times by other people. The WWE has an annoying habit of thinking a lot of chefs in the kitchen make a good meal. Truthfully, there should be one Raw writer, one SmackDown writer. That's probably it. Now, you can have assistant writers who you could delegate some responsibility to, like, oh, you take care of the women division, or you take care of a couple of particular tag teams or something. But one writer should live and die and fall on his sword. If that writer says, look, I want the New Day to turn heel on Kofi Kingston, okay. Nobody should say, well, but first they're going to come up with new outfits and pretend to be giant peacocks, and then Xavier is going to change his name to no. That's not the way it works. One writer writes something. You live and you die with it. If he sucks and the ratings go down and you don't like it, you replace him. But you don't take an idea and edit it 17 times and then say, well, everybody has to have their little bit in this or it's no good. It has to be a general consensus. It has to pass a line of 14 writers who each adds their little thing just so they can get their name on it. Because that's a recipe for disaster. You've heard the expression, too many cooks spoil the broth. Well, that's it. Live and die with a writer. Pick your head writer. He's the guy that comes up with the ideas. There's no modification. You either like the idea or you don't. Simple as that. So let's say I'm Vince McMahon, and a guy comes to me and says, yeah, I have an idea. We're going to turn Andrade Cien Almas into a superhero. He's going to fall in a bucket of something or other, and he's going to wear a Mexican wrestling mask, and I'm going to say, no, I think that idea sucks. I'm not doing it. Go back and think of something else. That's all. That's it. No other writers to modify it, change it, put their stink on it. Because when you have that much going on, it's impossible. And this is why no one is satisfied being a writer. It's not hard to write the angles. It is hard to be the writer if everything you write gets changed. I would rather see a horrible writer have carte blanche to do what he wants to do after it's okayed by Vince without changing. And at least you see his vision. And you may not like his vision. And you may say, I don't like this writer. And the ratings will reflect that. And then you fire that writer. And then you hire somebody else. And perhaps you like that guy better. And the ratings reflect that. But at the end of the day, it's their baby. If I write a novel, somebody may proofread it. Somebody may suggest editing it down a little bit. Maybe it's too long. Maybe this chapter's a little long, whatever. But they're not going to fundamentally change my characters and the plot line. And that's what the WWE does all the time. And that's why writers leave on a regular basis, because what's the point? What's the point of writing something if it just gets changed? And then you get blamed for the garbage that it ends up being. It's like a game of telephone. By the time it reaches the last person, you don't even recognize what it was you wrote. And then you're being saddled with it when it fails. So no, wrestling writing is not hard. Being the writer themselves in the WWE is goddamn impossible, the way they have this set up. They set you up to fail. I don't know why they think that's a good idea. Mike, you cannot delegate this to six or seven people. There has to be one guy who has the final say on this. Aside from Vince McMahon's approval, there has to be one writer who writes his stuff and says, you know, with minor refractions, it's still my baby.
Right. I mean, you may not have liked Vince Russo, but at least he wrote some stuff that Vince didn't go back and edit 17 times. You know, you may have not liked when he was in there with in WCW with Eric Bischoff, but they worked well together and they wrote some good stuff. They wrote some stuff and they didn't edit it 17 different times. You know, that's the problem.
That's right. That you can't do that. Okay. So maybe a lot of people said, oh, Russo stuff sucked. Okay. It's not for you. That's your opinion and that's your prerogative. But at least it came out relatively pure from who the writer was. The WWE's writing is not coming out that way, and that's why they're looking for a continuity director. No one's going to take that. Well, someone will take the job because someone wants to try to take a stab at getting that money. But a continuity director, you might as well try to herd cats. Continuity director for what? 1 minute you got Braun Strowman able to tip over an ambulance. The second minute you got him, he can't pick up Samoa Joe. How's that for continuity? He can tip over a 4,000-pound ambulance, but he can't pick up Samoa Joe. You can't have this. This is why everybody's unhappy, by the way, is because if I'm the writer, the very first thing I would insist on doing in the WWE, if you said to me, Marcus, you're the writer and you get your say, then I'd say the one thing I want to do is this. When I write something, it's going to be long term. It's not going to be this is just this week's writing. And I'm going to call the people in who are involved in it, and I'm going to tell them this is where this is leading. Yes, you're dropping a match tonight. Revival, you're dropping a lot of these matches to the Lucha House Party because we're trying to get through that you guys are pure tag team wrestlers and the Lucha House Party technically is cheating, but the fans love it because you're the bad guys. But where this is leading is you're going to drop two or three matches and then you're going to get mad and you're seriously going to injure one of these guys. And you're going to say, look, the clown time's over. You wanted to make us look like idiots? Well, now you're reaping the rewards for your efforts. And then you guys are going to have a serious feud to the remaining two of them, which you're winning. And that's going to set the groundwork for you guys saying, we're not here to joke and be a circus, as whichever guy we're going to take out for a while found out. So while it looks like you guys are being used like idiots for the next month, rest assured, bigger things are coming. Then at least the Revival can say, I gotcha. I know where this is heading. Sounds good. Okay. Lucha House Party can say, gotcha. We got our few minutes of fame here, but we got to pay for it at the end. This is the way you write. And then you keep all your performers happy because at least they know where they're going. So if you say to Rusev, look, Rusev, you're teaming up with Nakamura, even though I don't know why, because you thought he assaulted your wife. You're teaming up with Nakamura. Where this is leading is that Nakamura will eventually turn on you. You guys will have a series of matches. You're having this big whatever fight. Nakamura, maybe he's going to bring in a couple of people, maybe even a female to combat with Lana or something, maybe another male. And that's going to lead to the return of Aiden English. And you guys are going to reform the Rusev Day thing, and that's going to get a big pop. And then everybody sits down and says, that sounds good. Okay, so I'll look like an idiot for a while. As long as this is coming, I see where it's going. If you don't know where you're going, how can you say whether you like it or not? Then at least Rusev and Lana can say, no, we really don't like that. We really don't want to do that. Then you go to Vince and say, they don't want to do it. I came up with this idea. They don't want to do it. You want me to come up with another idea? You want to force them to do it? What do you want to do? I'll come up with another idea if that's better. But when you don't tell the people, when Bayley and Sasha hit the WrestleMania, and you thought, incidentally, you guys are losing, and they're just shell-shocked, what are you talking about? Why? Well, because that's what we decided. You guys are losing. And there's no, here's why, and here's what's coming forward. Sasha, Bayley, you're losing because we need you as solo people. This is going to lead to Sasha, you being bitter that Bayley lost. Remember all those times when you were hurt and Bayley did all the work? Well, the reason we did that is we want to make you look like an ungrateful bitch because Bayley carried your load for I don't know how long. And now, when she finally can't carry your load and she loses, you blame her and say, I lost nothing. Bayley did. That way we can really promote you as a really self-aggrandizing bitch who may pretend to be friends with people, but you really only care about yourself. And eventually that's going to lead to this big Bayley-Sasha feud that we've promised the fans for I don't know how long. And I guarantee you, if you said that, Sasha says, oh, well, that sounds pretty good. But nobody knows. Todd, it wouldn't be so bad if these performers knew where their future was for the next 4 or 5 months writing-wise.
Oh, you're absolutely right there, like you said. I remember back when you had ECW, you had Paul Heyman writing all these angles and everything and storylines, who's losing the belt, who's winning the belt. That's writing right there. That's the right way to handle things.
And nobody cared because they knew long term they were all going to be okay, Mike, and that's where the situation breaks down.
Right, and look, we've talked about how they used to take advantage of different things back in the day. Well, 2 weeks before WrestleMania, Lana gets on the internet and cuts a video on YouTube. That could have been writing gold. They just didn't use it. They just didn't use it, you know?
Or if it was suggested that they did, they got shot down. See, that's another thing. You don't even know what the writer suggested that they might get shot down over. It's just crazy. All I know is this. A bird in a box, a Muppet in a box, gets approved. There's no way you're pulling that off. I don't care who's involved in it. Some people are saying it's not Bray Wyatt. It's not going to be Bray Wyatt. It's going to be somebody. I don't care who it is. You're not going to be able to pull this off. So here we have it. This is why people are unhappy. Now, I got news. No matter what you do for a living, there's a good chance that you're not happy with every aspect of your job. And you don't have to be, as long as you're collecting your paycheck. If it gets to be the point where you're miserable coming to work, then I would suggest you find other work. The way you can stop people from being miserable coming to work is at least alleviating some of their fear that, oh no, I'm being phased out. In other words, if I ask somebody to do the job, or I ask somebody to really put somebody over, or I ask somebody to do something really out of character, or break up a team that's popular, or not use a move anymore because it's getting a pop and you're a heel, or whatever it happens to be, I'm going to give them my rationale. I'm going to tell him, this is why I don't want you to do X, Y, or Z. This is why we're breaking this team up. This is why we're doing this. This is why we're doing that. And if I show them, in the long run, it's probably going to benefit you. Because it gives you a good storyline going forward. You're going to be involved in the TV show on a regular basis. I guarantee you, 99% of the time, the talent would say, oh, well, that's cool. At least I know what I'm doing ahead of time. And by the way, wouldn't it help them in their performance when they say, oh, I know where this is leading, so I can throw in a little extra this or a little extra that to hint at this or hint at that. Now, I know the WWE, some people say, well, they want it to be like spur of the moment so that there is no like, oh, look, Becky and Sasha know they're losing. Look at the way they do their interviews. Well, if you're that unprofessional, because I promise you this much, you could tell me 3 months ahead of time that I am losing to Mr. X, and I will cut a promo every time that makes it sound like I'm kicking Mr. X's asses up, down, sideways, back and forth. And if I can't make you believe that I am beating Mr. X, I don't have no reason to be in this business. None. Zero. Because that's what you have to do. That's a prerequisite of this business. So if we're getting to the point where we can't really tell the wrestlers, because then they might kind of have a lousy on-mic thing about the feud. No, come on. Is this where we're coming to? Ridiculous. All you need to do is tell your athletes ahead of time where things are going, and you be honest with them. You tell Heath Slater, look, I got nothing for you. Heath, here's the deal. We value you as an employee. We think you're very good at what you do. But for the next 6 months, I mean, you're going to be putting guys over. We don't really have anything in the next 6 months for you except that. Now, we may write little things here and there to make sure you're on TV, but there's no major plans. And if Heath Slater accepts that, that's fine. At least he knows where he is. Not knowing is the thing. When you got Rusev and Lana saying we're losing all the time, we're looking like idiots, we don't know, are we being phased out, or should we be looking for another job? What's going on? That's not good. How come you as a writer can't go to them and say, don't worry about being phased out? This is all leading to this. And guess what? If you're a good writer, everything you write leads to something. That's the whole point. There's no dead ends in writing. It's always open-ended. It's leading to something. It's alive at all times. Until maybe WrestleMania, when the feuds end and you wipe the slate clean and you start fresh. That's how you write for a wrestling federation. But you can't do it if 40 people have to have their stink mark on it. So my suggestion to the WWE is you hire two head writers, one for SmackDown, one for Raw. Forget NXT and forget 205 Live. Do what you're going to do. One for Raw, one for SmackDown. That head writer maybe has two assistants. They do not have to edit anything at all. Their worth is to proofread it and say, well, maybe make a suggestion. But that head writer can say no or can say, okay, that sounds good. Maybe when they're trusted, they can be designated to you take care of the women's division or you take care of a few particular feuds that's going on here so I can work on something else. That's it. No, everybody gets a shot at this. Everybody gets their own edit at it. No. And the main thing is let the workers and the performers know where the angle you're writing is heading for them. And if it's heading nowhere, if it's just, look, we're just killing time, dude, until your contract runs out, then tell them. Just be honest. That's all you have to do. Now, there's some more news to report. We have already told you that AJ Styles was injured and flew home right after WrestleMania. We do not know the extent of the injury. He was not on SmackDown. I don't think it's anything too terribly serious, but it has kept him obviously off that SmackDown. I don't know if he's even returned to doing anything on the road. I doubt it. We'll see if we see him on this SmackDown or we hear any further thing. But also injured that we did not know about. We knew about Rey Mysterio, obviously. Is Daniel Bryan. Apparently, Daniel Bryan was injured at WrestleMania, and we don't know what the extent of that injury is either. So in between the breakdowns and communication on the writing staff, the people who are woefully unhappy with their spot on the card, and injuries, the WWE has a real problem here. Because their work environment is toxic. Because there's no communication. Now, you can say, well, Marcus, how do you know? You're not behind the scenes. Well, I can tell you, because I can read the tweets of the people. I can read between the lines. I can see the people resigning and stepping down. I can see the athletes asking for their releases. And you know what the situation is. And you can hear them when they do their interviews saying, look, crying out for it. We're not happy. There's a toxic situation backstage because no one communicates with the other one. Vince McMahon, Triple H, and anybody else that's the powers that be need a writing staff that's in constant communication with their athletes. If their athletes look at the writers as their enemies, or I ain't doing that, or blah, 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 then you call them into Vince's office and you say, look, the writers are your best friends. I suggest you guys get real buddy-buddy with each other. Because the bottom line of the situation is, they're just as important as you. Maybe more so. You know, Alfred Hitchcock, the famous director, once said, actors are cattle. It doesn't matter who the actor is. He said, I work with Jimmy Stewart because he was a big box office draw at the time and they wanted somebody in my movie that would, you know, perhaps help sell tickets. But I could have worked with anybody else. It's not like he did anything somebody else couldn't do. And he gives a perfect example, which I will actually pass on to you guys. He said, imagine a man sitting at a window, looking out a window. He's an actor. And I show him smiling. You don't know why he's smiling. And then I pan down to the street. And there's a young woman there holding the hand of her child, kissing him on the head as she walks along. And the impression that you get is the man in the window is a nice man who maybe he would like a family. He likes children. He's a nice guy. The sight of a mother with her child, kissing him on the head, walking on a beautiful sunny day, has made him smile. Now imagine I pan down, and it's a man beating the hell out of a homeless person. That smile is the same smile. I could have that actor smile and go home. He doesn't even have to know what I'm shooting after that. And I give a totally different impression. Now the impression is that that person in the window is a psychopath who enjoys watching innocent people being beaten. It's the same smile. What did the actor do? Smile for the camera. Okay, go home. And I can make him look like a wonderful man or a horrible human being. That's what a writer can do. You understand? So a writer is more crucial sometimes than the performer. The performer's job is to get in there and complete what the writer says, just like an actor. Yes, it's more physical. But I've heard a lot of stories about, oh, well, everybody resents the writers. Well, you better not resent the writers. The writers and you guys should be working hand in hand, buddy, buddy. You should all be going in saying, oh, good, we're all going to have a meeting about where our characters are going in the next month or two. Why can't you do that? Why can't you have a meeting with your workers saying, here's where your characters in general are going in the next month or two. These are the directions we're taking your characters. So everybody's happy and says, gotcha. I know what I'm doing for 60 days, 90 days, 30 days. I'm happy. I'm not being left out in the dark. I'm not saying, uh-oh, is this my swan song? Uh-oh, what's happening to my career? No, you know. How come that can't be done, Mike? That sounds fundamentally very easy.
It does sound fundamentally better, very easy. And for the greater part of 40 years for the WWE, it has been fundamentally very easy, you know? I mean, before this short span of time, and it's only been, what, 2 or 3 years since this crap has been going on, you know? Before then, it was very easy. You would look at you're not going to hear up until this last 2 or 3, 4 years of writers wanting to leave, you know.
That's true.
Basically, writers would stay there almost until Vince fired them, you know.
It's absolutely true, Mike. But there's another point we have to bring up, and then we'll get to SmackDown. And that point is wrestlers have become more sensitive because they are being told or conditioned to believe that they're really winning something. Oh, I don't want to look bad. I'm not dropping. I don't want to do. What are you talking about? You're playing a character on a television show. I've said this a million times. I'll say it a million more. People who want to be in the movies do not say, I'm not losing to Steven Seagal. He's a 60-year-old fat guy. I'm a ninth degree black belt. I could kick his ass. No, you just say, well, okay, fine. I'll make him look like he killed me with one punch because that's my job. And then you don't go say, well, all right, I don't want to do no more movies where I get jobbed. What are you talking about? What the hell are you talking about? That's the script. You're not really winning anything. So this is the problem. This hypersensitive society we're in, combined with the fact that wrestling is now being shoved down our throats as it's a sport, it's a sport, it's a sport, it's a sport. You win based on your athleticism and your talent. It's not true. And now the performers are believing it. And that's not good. I mean, Sasha Banks should be able to blow this off and say, I hope to get a bigger part in the WWE's television program. Obviously, I hope to be one of the main characters. But if I'm not for a few months, I'm not. It's not like we're in competition. It's not like we're winning anything. We're given a script. We do what we're told. Everybody knows that's what it is. It's almost like you're trying to bluff the public again into thinking it's real. It's not. And we know it's not. Dean Malenko won nothing. When he could have tapped out 90% of the WWE. Dan Severn never amounted to anything when he probably could have tapped out 90% of the WWE. It just doesn't work that way, folks. We got to stop doing this because then the athletes think, well, my fan perception's terrible because, well, come on. It's ridiculous. Anyway, one last rumor. And again, this has not been confirmed, so you can take it with a grain of salt. But it wouldn't surprise me. Is that apparently Dean Ambrose, who's taking a hiatus from the WWE, and that's very much what I think it is, actually had a carrot dangled in front of his nose by AEW, who reportedly offered him 1 or 2 year deal, just 1 or 2 years, depending. If he really was sick of wrestling and he didn't want to do 2 years, then just one. And the figure I'm getting is a few million dollars for a single year. And when I say a few million, I don't mean two or three. It's a lot of money. It's a lot more money than Dean Ambrose has made. Now, will he go? Probably not. Probably not, because I'm still very much convinced that the WWE worked something out with him by which this man is still getting paid. And they got first dibs on him if he wants to come back as a performer. That is, unless Vince McMahon is insane, which I don't think he is, and Dean Ambrose comes to you and says, I'm sick and tired of the business. I don't even know if I want to do this anymore. I need my time. Then you say, well, that's fine. We'll continue to pay you. Why not? You pay all these legends and legends contracts. We'll continue to pay you as a WWE performer for a certain period of time, a year. In that course of time, if you decide you miss wrestling and you want to come back, we get first shot. We also get first shot at renewing this deal for another year. Meaning, for 2 years minimum, you're ours, even if you don't set foot in an arena. What would it cost the WWE? A lot less than losing them, so of course they've got them down to something like that. Of course they do. And AEW probably knows it, and that's why they can dangle this big fat carrot. They hope, well, somebody else sees how much money we offered Dean Ambrose. We know we're not getting Ambrose for that kind of money, and probably wouldn't give it to him if they did. But other stars will see this and say, whoa, if there's that kind of money out there, and you see where I'm going with this, right? So I don't know. I would say that if you see Dean Ambrose in a ring, again, it's probably still going to be a WWE ring unless the WWE had made a very bad, very stupid blunder. But let's get on to SmackDown. Look, folks, there's not a lot to talk about really with SmackDown. SmackDown was almost a dead repeat of Raw. Just throw in some, you know, a couple extra people. The brand split or the superstar shakeup has already happened, apparently. You had the Bar over on Raw. You got Braun Strowman over on SmackDown. People are just interchanging as they will. So I don't know what it's all about. But we start off with the New Day celebration for Kofi Kingston's win. And I'll tell you this. They could have put on midget wrestling, mud wrestling, and Bray Wyatt wrestling the Thing in the Box after this. And it still would be a great show, and here's why. This was probably the best segment that the WWE has ran in 5 years. And the reason it's that good is because it felt, until the Bar showed up, it felt not one tiny bit scripted. Never once did I say, oh, okay, who wrote that line? Or, oh, yeah, they could have probably done a better job writing that. I don't think anybody wrote anything. Kofi Kingston came out. Big E and Xavier Woods seemed to ad-lib it a little bit, with Big E doing a split again and having a good time with the crowd. Then they both took turns saying, look, here's the real Kofi Kingston. This is what Kofi Kingston meant to us when we met him. Didn't sound scripted to me. Then Kofi Kingston gets a chance to thank his family, thank the audience, thank everybody. Doesn't sound scripted to me. And the crowd reaction to this is genuine because this is genuine. And this is what good writers always strive for. Something that seems genuine enough that the crowd says, I don't feel like this is a work in any way, shape, or form. Now, the Bar coming out after what they pulled on Monday night got a tremendous chorus of boos, but in some ways it wasn't bad because at least you weren't promised something you weren't going to get. They said, look, we're going to challenge you guys to a 3-on-3 match. Big E says, your math is kind of sketchy. There's only two of you. And Drew McIntyre comes out. So Drew McIntyre's able to come to SmackDown now. Why Drew McIntyre would team with the Bar, I don't know. What his beef with the New Day would be, I just have no idea. And why you would want to put Drew McIntyre in a situation where you know he's going to be in a losing effort, I don't know. These are all very questionable things. But what I do know is that segment is the reason I watch professional wrestling. That segment is perfect. Kofi Kingston may turn out to be, if the WWE allows him to be, Kofi Kingston may turn out to be one of the better WWE champions in a long time. Because he has the crowd behind him, not so much because he's a great performer. Yes, he's a great performer. Not so much because he's the underdog, because after all, he's a champion now. But because everything the New Day does, even the stupid pancakes and cereal and everything that they do seems like it's not scripted. It seems like they're just coming out there and saying, we're going to have fun, or we're going to come out here and we're really going to pay tribute to our friend, or we're going to come out here and we're really going to be pissed off at a situation. At no time does the New Day look overly scripted. They always seem to be ad-libbing. And Mike, that has been gold for them for a long time, and now you're reaping the rewards of that.
You really are. And it brings me to a line from a Futurama when Bender goes off to meet God, or what he thinks is God, and the line goes a little bit of something like this. They don't, some about, they don't seem, they don't, if you don't, if it seems like you're doing anything, you don't do anything at all, or something like that. And that's what this feels like. This segment felt like, well, the writers didn't write that, but we know they did, but they didn't, you know. And it worked. That's why it seemed genuine. It seemed every word that came out of Big E's mouth, I mean, Big E's hilarious as it is, you know. Mm-hmm. This is, we at one point, we'd compared them to the Freebirds. At one point, they're better than the Freebirds right now.
I got to tell you, Mike, that's a very controversial thing to say, but I agree with you. I agree with you. I don't know if there's a better look. Probably just in-ring ability, the Usos may be a better tag team. But there is no way on earth that the Usos or anyone else, and I don't care who it is, and I mean this sincerely, and you can yell and scream at me, folks, if you want. There is no better faction on the face of this earth than the New Day. There isn't. There just isn't. They embody every single thing that professional wrestling is supposed to be, and they get it right every time. Every time. They are exactly what I say when I say you have to entertain first and then deliver. That's what they do. There's a lot of people who can deliver, but they don't. They're not entertaining. Then there's a lot of people who can entertain, but then they don't deliver. New Day does both. And they do it effortlessly. Because I don't really think they're playing characters so much as they're just exaggerating their own personalities. I'm sure they don't throw pancakes at the street when they walk, and I'm sure they don't walk around with a trombone, but you get my point. And when Kofi Kingston shows his wife and kids in the crowd, it's not a plant. It's not a female wrestler who somebody's going to come out and try to, yank by the hair of the head. It just seems real. It's like, yeah, that's his wife. And look, oh, there's his kids. And they get in the ring and you're like, Jesus, man, this is real. There's a different feel. And I promise you, the first person, whether it be a Lars Sullivan or a Drew McIntyre or Randy Orton or whoever, really steps up to Kofi Kingston, they're going to get heat. Really big heat. And that's what a great face is about. We're looking at some very, very good possibilities here with Kofi Kingston as the champion. Now, is he great on the mic? No. He's not. So you can't force him. Kofi's just got to be Kofi now. Yeah, he can play around with a New Day like he does, but when he takes the mic individually, he's just going to have to be Kofi. Don't script all these long-winded things for him to say. He's not going to do it right. Just let him be Kofi. Because that's good enough. The fans absolutely love this. Because they're being given something they haven't been given in a long time, and that's reality. Now, people will say, well, look, they really had AJ Styles' wife and kids there. Yeah, and what'd they do? They used it as a gimmick, right? And the minute they used it as a gimmick, you nullified any realism about that because people said, oh, that's not really going to bully his wife and kids. My God, they'd fight backstage. They'd fight in the parking lot. He'd have the man arrested. Don't let any of these heels don't have to do any of that to Kofi. See, that's the beauty of it. The beauty of it is a heel doesn't have to come out and yell at Kofi Kingston's wife or menace their children. All a heel has to do is, and doesn't even have to mention them. All a heel has to do is come out and you say, oh my God, if his wife and kids are in the audience, that's horrible. That guy just did this to Kofi Kingston with his wife and kids in the audience because you now know his wife and kids and you believe them to be real. Not characters in the WWE universe. Real. you see Big E and Xavier interacting with Kofi's kids, and you're like, they really are friends. It's not, oh, we really don't like each other. We just play characters who like each other, and backstage we don't even talk to each other. You can tell they're friends. You can see the interaction. They're obviously friends. You've got something big here. I'm telling you, you got something big. And as much as the fans don't want to hear it, at some point, if the New Day do turn on Kofi Kingston, you would have the biggest heel team maybe ever. And it could happen. So the WWE's caught lightning in a bottle here because they didn't write this. I mean, not until the last minute. And once again, instead of the WWE taking note of this and saying, well, look, how come accidents seem to turn out better than scripted writing? They just say, oh, no, no, we wrote that. Well, you wrote that after accident after accident after accident happened, and you were forced to write something last minute. How come your writer can't write that without accidents happening? How come that wasn't the plan from the very beginning? Because that's a brilliancy. And then you could take a look at that, and I'd say, that was a good writer because he turned Kofi from a minor figure into this, and that's some great writing. But when your back's against the wall, you have no choice, and the fans kind of do it for you, then you take credit for it. Much like the Road Dogg took credit for Becky Lynch. The Road Dogg didn't write the Becky Lynch thing. The Road Dogg wrote that Becky Lynch turns on Charlotte and becomes a huge heel. The crowd wrote, Becky Lynch is our hero, and then you just said, reluctantly, okay. Two of the biggest things you have going for you, you didn't write. And that should be a clear signal, Todd, to the WWE that something's wrong in their writing staff.
Oh, you're absolutely right there. Like you said, I think there's something wrong on their writing staff, like on Raw and SmackDown. Like, both shows have, there's something wrong with both the writing teams, and like you said, they had a while back. They had Dusty Rhodes, the head writer of SmackDown, and I think they had Zip Coulter as a writer for Monday Night Raw or something a while back too. And that's what it was back then. You had two different writers on two different brands. That was the right way to go.
Yeah, if you can just settle into a writer and his assistant, or even if you want two assistants, whatever you got to have, but not three writers who all have to put their stamp on it. Anyway, a great opening segment, really, really strong opening segment. We then get to this weird tag team thing with Aleister Black and Ricochet and look, if you want to continue to use Aleister Black and Ricochet as a tag team, that's your prerogative, I guess. I'm telling you right now, this is not the best use for them. Ali also. It's not even the best use for him, although he's going to go on to solo things. And, of course, Nakamura and Rusev and Andrade. And this is a great example of what I'm talking about. If you're a writer and you have to write this match, you have to ask yourself the following questions. What's in the future for Aleister Black and Ricochet? You want to keep them a solid tag team for the next 5 months, 6 months? You do? Okay. What's in the future for Ali? Anything? Or is he just going to be a jabron? No, you're going to push him up? Okay. Well, then we already know Aleister Black, Ricochet, and Ali got to win. Now my question is, what do you got in mind for Rusev, and how do we turn this into a positive for Rusev and Nakamura and Andrade? One thing we have to ask is, you're still planning on pushing Andrade, right? Yeah? Okay, well then he can't lose. So now it's down to Rusev and Nakamura. If you got nothing for Nakamura, and you know he's walking and he's going to go surfing, after his contract expired, Nakamura is the one I picked to count the ring lights. That's the way good writing works. Instead, you have Andrade take the fall when Nakamura is probably walking away from your federation, and now you've kind of slowed Andrade's momentum. I don't understand that. I just don't understand it. That's poor writing because you didn't have the foresight. Because the WWE don't know what they're doing. We don't know what we're doing with Andretti. We don't know if Nakamura's leaving. We don't know if we're going to push Rusev or we're not going to push Rusev. Well, you got to know these things. That way the writer can legitimately say what I just told you. If we're pushing the other side, one is a solid tag team who's probably going to win the belts, and one is a top competitor. That side ain't losing. We got that. The faces are winning. We got that. Now, before we decide how, do you want to get a Rusev Nakamura match out of this somehow? Because if you do, how about if we have one of the guys screw up and hit his partner or something like that? No, you don't want to do that? You're no interest in that? Okay. Is Andretti going to be a bum? No? Okay, well, he can't lose. So out of the three people, which is the one that's most likely not going to have a future here? Nakamura says he's probably not re-signing? Then Nakamura's losing. That's all. That's not hard. And how it ends up Andretti loses, I just don't know. He's the least likely person to lose based upon your booking of how you have been using him lately. Now, some would say, well, they want to put the team over as the strongest team. Well, it was Ali who got the pinfall. It wasn't even Black or Ricochet. Maybe we want to start Ali and Andrade. That's what they're, you know, that's what we got in the future, Marcus. So how are you going to work this? Well, if you want to start Ali and Andrade, very, very, very simple. Ali gets the pinfall on Nakamura and Andretti beats the hell out of him. Instead, you have Randy Orton for no reason whatsoever that I can think of, RKO somebody, and then right behind him, Kevin Owens. And I guess the writing's going to be that Kevin Owens and Randy Orton are going to fight, maybe? I don't. It's impossible to dissect the writing because it doesn't make a lot of sense. It's so all over the place. One day Andretti's a world beater. The next time he's dropping in a tag team match with two guys who haven't won a match in a year. So I don't know. And that's what I mean when I say it's inconsistent writing, Mike.
It really is. And look, you talk about accidental writing and, you know, that type of thing. The accident that brought us Kofi Kingston, the lightning in a bottle that is Kofi Kingston, is the Ali injury. That was supposed to be Ali.
Right.
You know, that was supposed to be his spot. Now, as far as what you're talking about with Andrade, I mean, I've said it before with Andrade. Not only are you supposed to be making him look strong, but you're supposed to be making Zelina Vega look strong as his business manager. You know, if he's dropping matches, how does that make her look? You know,
that's I agree with you. It looks makes you look very ineffectual. And again, if you got anything for Andretti, then again, the continuity isn't there. When you say, well, didn't he just drop a tag team match? Why do I believe he's going to beat Kofi Kingston? You know what I mean? It's not the continuity is not there because they don't know ahead of time too much of what they want to do. So now the Iconics come out and they pull the old, we're going to wrestle the greatest tag team in the world. And it turns out to be two local talent girls who apparently have a record of 45 wins or something. And they just beat the hell out of them. That's typical heel heat. That's fine. I mean, what else are you going to do? What I'm most worried about that I don't like, at least yet, is Paige backstage saying next week they're going to have some real talent. I got some real talent for them because I'm worried. I'm very worried that whoever she comes up with is probably going to beat them. And then we got two changes of hands. And then the WWE is going to say, well, we didn't want a face team to beat Bayley and Sasha, so we had to make the Iconics transitional champions. Well, why'd you give it to them to begin with then? This is a gimmick that the Iconics should be doing week after week after week after week. Until fans say, well, I don't know, are you ever going to fight anybody? And then finally, Paige can say, all right, I've had enough of this. Next week, you're going to have some real competition. You're telling the story too quickly. The Iconics just won the belts. They had one match of this caliber. That's it, one. Let's stretch this out a little bit if it's going to lead to something like that. Again, poor writing because it's too quick. And we'll sum up the Becky Lynch thing again with Lacey Evans. I do not understand if Becky Lynch is going to fight Lacey Evans as her first title defense, please explain to me what Lacey Evans has done other than punch Becky Lynch in the face twice that would make her the number one contender for the women's title, both women's titles, which you say are the most prestigious thing in the Federation. What has she done? And then you want us to take the belts seriously. So you mean to tell me, if that's the case, then the guy who jumped in and attacked Bret Hart should be like the number one contender because he attacked somebody, right? I mean, it doesn't make sense what you're saying. Now, if Lacey Evans had been walking down to that ring all this time, beating first minor talent, then mid-card talent, and then she did this to Becky Lynch, you'd say, well, this could be good. I know this girl's good. I've seen her. Her first feud's going to be against Becky Lynch. She's probably not winning, so what are you going to do? All of this build-up has been for her to fight Becky Lynch once and get her ass kicked? That's it? That's what your build was? That's what you sat down and wrote. Lacey Evans walks to the ring every week on Raw and SmackDown, does nothing. After WrestleMania, attacks Becky Lynch. Fights Becky Lynch at next pay-per-view, loses. Becomes irrelevant. That's it? That's your writing? That doesn't even make any sense. And again, if you're Lacey Evans, you're like, what the hell are you throwing me to the wolves the first freaking feud I have for? Why can't I get a few wins under my belt and have some credibility before I go against the women's champion? So I suppose if a woman just jumps out of the audience randomly and tackles Becky Lynch, then she should be the next contender? Your belts aren't going to mean anything unless you say the top people, the actual people who deserve the shots, are the people who are getting them. So, Mike, I think that's another problem with the continuity of this federation.
Right. And the fact of the matter is we don't know who Paige is going to bring in. We don't know what – I mean, obviously, if she says this, they've got a plan. Now, there are things that – I mean, there are people down in NXT like Io Shirai and
– Yeah, and that's who they are.
Kairi Sane.
Yep.
Right. So, well, I mean, I would have thought maybe the other two horse women, but also because they're basically nothing more than a tag team too. They're her hits women, but they're tag team. So, but yeah, I mean, and this is a point. This is another point. Not just the writing here. They don't have enough women tag teams. You know, and that's why they put Bayley and Sasha together, because they didn't have enough women tag teams.
Right now, Mike, the money is obviously on Becky Lynch versus Shayna Baszler. Hands down, that's where the money is. And if that's where the money is, Shayna Baszler right now should be on NXT talking trash, saying, I've beaten every girl in this federation twice. Twice. And if you throw me another unworthy contender, I'm breaking her freaking arm. And from now on, I'm breaking everybody's arm that comes in here that is not a quality opponent, because I'm tired of it now. And then have Becky Lynch storm NXT and get into a real legitimate fight. What looks like a real legitimate fight. I don't care if you don't even put the belts on the line. That's where the money is. Now, I know you're saying we're going to save that because of the horsewomen. Nobody wants to see the horsewomen. Nobody wants to see it. I don't want to see it. I don't care what Bayley and Sasha does. Sasha may not even be around. And Bayley has been made to look weak and ineffectual. And Charlotte sucks as a face. So I don't want to see the horsewomen. I want to see Shayna Baszler, Becky Lynch in a major feud. And I mean a major feud. I don't mean a one shot. I don't mean a disqualification match and then a follow-up. I mean a five-month bitter knockdown, drag out, change the course of women's wrestling feud. And they can do it. That's where your money is. But, of course, you got NXT to think about because down there, we can't pull this one. How would you like it if I don't know who your favorite baseball team is, but let's say it's the Yankees, and you say, look, we're going to pull these guys from our AAA team, and the manager says, oh, no, we need them. We won't win without them. You can't have them. Well, that's the whole point of the team existing. The AAA team exists to feed the majors. I thought that's what NXT was supposed to be. If that's not what NXT is anymore, there's no reason for it to exist. Just merge it with the WWE then. Why wouldn't you? Because Triple H wants his own ego trip of daddy gave me a toy to play with? Now, granted, it's a hell of a lot better than the WWE. But at some stage, you've got to either say, look, my job is to develop talent for the roster, or my job is to try to take over NXT, to take over WWE. That's your two options. And I know they're going to say, well, it's an alternative. It's not an alternative. They're all signed to the same goddamn company. So if you think Shayna Baszler and Becky Lynch could tear the joint up, you got to bring up Shayna Baszler. And if NXT loses a few fans or you can't replace her that easily, well, that's life. Why do you think they're down there? Anyway, let's move on to the tag team match. The Usos against the Hardy Boys. I'll tell you, I don't know. I feel like I'm losing my mind sometimes. So the Usos signed their big 5-year deal, and they're treated to, you get to win the belts, and then you get to lose them to the Hardy Boys. And Sasha's worried that, she's being treated differently than other people. I don't know why the Hardy Boys are the champions. I guess just out of sheer respect. I don't know why the Hardy Boys are the champions. And then Lars Sullivan comes down and decimates both of them, which at least is better than what he did with the Kurt Angle thing. Because he just decimated two champions. Granted, they were in a hard match. But he also ruined their celebration. And it's a hell of a lot better heel move. But for the life of me, I don't know why the Hardys are the champs. I guess they were just sick of the Usos being the champ. And they just said, oh, whatever, you know. They just barely got the belts. And you figured that was leading up to Aleister Black and Ricochet, I would imagine. Now we're going to get Aleister Black and Ricochet maybe against the Hardys? That's not a good match. It's not a good match. See, this is the thing about the WWE. Tell me what's lying ahead, like I've been saying for this whole show. Tell me what's lying a month ahead, and then I'll tell you whether it's a good job, but I don't think it's a good job. Because I think what's lying a month ahead is the Hardys are going to lose. They're transitional champions. That's not the match anybody wanted to see anyway. They would have wanted to see Black and Ricochet against the Usos, I imagine. What really probably should have happened there is Lars Sullivan should have come down and decimated all four of them. And there was no actual winner or loser because everybody's disqualified. It's just a non-match because Lars Sullivan just demolished two tag teams. Then if you wanted to have your rematch at some point, have it. But I just don't see the point of having the Usos lose. The second thing you got to do, and I hope that it's taken care of this Monday, is you got to get people on a show and keep them there. I'm tired of seeing Aleister Black and Ricochet on both shows. Why would you, as a newcomer, be granted options better than people who've been there 10 years. That's not fair. How come you get all kinds of bites at the apple? I'll get to go for these belts, then I'll get to go for these belts. If I don't win this, I'll go here. How come you get that? What are you saying? NXT is better, is a bigger organization than the WWE. If you come from there, you get special privileges? That doesn't make any sense. Get him on a show and stick him there and get him in a feud already. I don't know whether they were, you wasted time on the Revival. Now that's irrelevant. You really going to put him up against Hawkins and Ryder? I don't think so. So you're going to put him up against the Hardys. How is that good for Black and Ricochet? When the crowd's going to be mixed. See, that's the problem. I don't like where that's going. I'll tell you right now, I don't like where it's going. I saw no reason at all for the Usos to lose that belt in that situation, Mike. In fact, I was very shocked because I don't know where you'll take it from here.
I don't know where you take it from here either. And look, that's a, you know, don't get me started on what they didn't do with the Hardys when they first got there. Don't get me started on that. Now, you know, yeah, you're right with Lars Sullivan. He's probably the only one that should be able to go from, one show to the other, because that's going to give him more chances to decimate people. You know, that's what he needs to be doing for the next, let's say, 3-4 months, 2-3 months, is just walking in, decimating somebody. Yeah, he'll have a match here and there, but walking in, decimating people, destroying matches, and boom, there you go. There's his reputation.
See, here's what I think. I wouldn't give him any matches if you want to do that, because then I don't mind if somebody just shows up on both shows where you're like, I don't know what's wrong with this guy. He just keeps showing up and beating people up on both shows. Okay. He's not having matches. But when you're legitimately having matches and you're trying to be a contender on Raw, and then the next night you're on SmackDown trying to be a contender, it's like, how? And then you're on in NXT having a title shot. How come you get three bites of the apple? Well, we're going for the NXT belts, and we're going to be contenders for the Raw belts, and we're going to be contenders for the SmackDown belts. And when we finally win one, then we'll be the champions. Well, you're getting three opportunities to everybody else's one. And then you're supposed to be the faces? See, that doesn't look right to me. I don't like it. The aesthetics of that is terrible. For Lars Sullivan, it's okay if he just comes in, because people are like, we don't even know if he signed either one. He just keeps showing up and beating people up. But when he finally does sign and have a match, it should just be with one. We got Samoa Joe, who quickly attacks R-Truth, and then Braun Strowman shows up because I guess there is no more brand split. And this is the thing that bothers me. This is the damn inconsistency with writing. You say you want a continuity writer, a continuity programmer, whatever the hell it is. You need one. Braun Strowman, who picked up an ambulance, who tore a car apart with his bare hands, cannot pick up Samoa Joe. However, we've clearly seen Brock Lesnar do it 50 times. So now the aesthetics is Samoa Joe is so big, even the monster Braun Strowman can't fully get him up. Okay, well, then I guess Braun Strowman's not as strong as Brock Lesnar, because Lesnar did it 8, 10, 12, 14 times. See, that's the problem. There's no continuity there. You can't have that. You just can't have that. If you didn't want him to be power slammed, fine. Have Joe wiggle out and pound him with his elbow in his face and say, well, he definitely got him up with ease, but Joe fought out of it. Not he couldn't manage to pick up the massive Samoa Joe. What the hell are you talking about? AJ Styles picked up Samoa Joe. AJ Styles picked him up. He's 5 pounds away from a cruiserweight. But Braun Strowman, the man who tipped over an ambulance, can't do it. And you promote it. Oh, look, even Braun Strowman can't get up the massive Samoa Joe. What are you, morons? boy, do you need a continuity director. There's no way I would have let that happen if I was there. I would have said, what are you, out of your mind? Oh, we want to promote Joe as being... I don't care what you want to promote him as. Then elbow him in the face and say Joe fought out of it. But if Braun Strowman isn't strong enough to pick up a man who's 100 pounds less than him, how the hell is he a monster? You morons! Ridiculous! But it doesn't matter. Nothing matters past the first segment of this show. Because the first segment of this show was the best segment on Raw or SmackDown in 5 years. And the minute it was over, I said, it does not matter if they don't even have a match. It doesn't matter if they just have people come out and play patty cake. This is A+. It's an A+ show because of this, because you can't get better than that. And when you hit a home run like that, it doesn't matter if the next guy fouls out. So, Mike, I'm giving an A+. What's your rating?
I got to give it an A+. And look, as far as you're going with the continuity, I like watching the superhero shows, particularly the ones they call the Arrowverse, because what they do there is between the shows, they have a continuity that tells you that these shows are taking place, at least, if not on the same Earth, at least in the same universe or multiverse, all right? It's happening at the same day. It's happening at the same time. It's happening,
right. You
know, boom, 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 boom. You know, that's what's missing. Where in the
What's missing is I don't think the writers watch their own shows. How about if we do this thing where Samoa Joe's so massive, even the mighty Braun Strowman can't get him up, and nobody raises their hand and says, wait a minute, AJ Styles picked him up 3 times. Anyway, Todd, A+ show for me. What's yours?
I got to go with you, A+.
Here's the deal, folks. Had that opening segment not happened, and had the New Day not established themselves as the greatest professional wrestling act today, period, end of conversation, bar none, this would have been a C- show, maybe a D. They single-handedly lifted that show up. You have got gold right now, and I mean gold, and you better understand that you've got gold, because you're not going to get a ton of chances anymore. The WWE, as I said in the beginning of the show, is obviously not a great place to work, not a fun place to work, not a happy place to work, and yet somehow the New Day make it fun, make it happy, and make it entertaining, and they deliver every single time. We'll see you on Sunday with more Wrestle Chat Radio.
You're listening to Wrestle Chat Radio.
Wrestle Chat Radio is a Savage Blade production.